T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, we've made it. We're here. It's NFL Draft Week. Good to be along with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. All right, Joe. I mean, we are 4 days away, and we've had a lot of talk for the last few months. Jeremy's been on the wide receiver train, and you know he's been the conductor of the wide receiver train. I think we all know, even Brandon Bean kind of, you know, alluded to, you know, they know that they have some work to do at the position. You know, he said last week they feel pretty comfortable at, you know, with the guys they have and don't need a number one, whatever. I think that they're going to be looking pretty, you know, highly at that position. But here's the question for you. Have you, at this point on April 22nd, kind of gotten yourself to be entrenched one way or the other on what they're going to do, whether that's trade up, trade down, stay where they are, make wide receiver over anything else? Is it, are you entrenched? I'm pretty confident they're going to do this.
I'm right now, I think a version of what they've done in the past, which is a smaller level trade up that gets you up 5, 6, 7 spots. And that they're going to go get Brian Thomas Jr. Like that. If you ask me the most likely scenario in my mind right now, I think that is the most likely scenario. That they'll move up 5 to 10 spots and they'll get Thomas. Because I think he just fits a lot of what they need. Anything beyond that, like, I just think it's such a big idea to go up into the top three receivers that the likelihood of it just, you know, like, Bean might even want to do it, and I feel like it's still unlikely to happen just because you've got to get a team on the hook versus, you know, the trade-up that I'm talking about, I think, is usually achievable.
And you can't wait at 28 to get him, right? I mean, there's no way he's falling that far. I have seen a couple mocks where he gets that far, but generally not the case.
To where? To, like, to 28? Or to 20
Brian
in general.
Thomas, yeah.
Yeah. I think... would you?
I'm saying there's no way he falls that far to 28.
I don't know about no way. I think it's unlikely. I think it's definitely unlikely. I've seen a couple mocks, maybe even the most recent one from Mel Kiper had him falling to 28. So you see it once in a while,
okay.
But yeah. Very often, no. Yeah, very often he's gone in the late teens, sometimes the early 20s. I think his over-under at the betting sites is 17.5, so we're talking 10 picks before the Bills. So,
yeah.
Sure, it would definitely be a surprise if he fell to 28. And at that point, you might think, well, if he's there, then maybe I have some confirmation that Bean, he doesn't have to be Bean's guy. If he didn't think it was worth it to go up 3-4 spots even to get him, maybe he's got a different guy. Maybe Leggett, because Leggett's someone that almost always seems to be on the board at 28. So, yeah, but for Thomas, it almost always sounds like you got to trade up for him.
Yeah, I think so too. I am warming up more to the idea, both in my own view of whether they should or shouldn't do it, and whether they will or won't do it, right? There's those two different things. You think they might do something, but you don't want them to, or you think they won't do something you want them to, whatever. I am warming up to the idea, A, that they might actually do it more, and B, that I am not opposed to it, of trading back. I did not think they should do it going into this process a couple months ago, even with the depth at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But the more that we've gone through this process, and the more it looks like you're going to have to give up to go up, even though they have 10 picks. I understand that. They had 11 as of a while ago, and then the Diggs trade, and they have one less now. They have 10 picks. I still think that's a lot. They don't need all 10. So you have capital to move up. That's fine. I still prefer the trade up to get a guy, but I'm much more open to the idea now of trading down, A, from my own vantage point, and B, from what I think they might actually do.
Yeah. Yeah. I debate. Like, there's the defensive end conversation, too, and there's the roster being where it is versus a couple of years ago. It's kind of a desperate situation at the position as well, which, you know, like, I guess we don't fully know, like, what they think of the combo of Kincaid, Samuel, and Shakir as, can that be your 1-2-3 in terms of target getters? Mm. Cook as well, like, Brady's offense. We don't have a full look, a full scope of what Brady wants because mid-season you got to do a lot of things the way Dorsey did. So there are question marks revolving around it, but man, I'm as confident in any draft year I think that Bean has been the GM other than second to quarterback, right? Like we all knew they were getting a quarterback, that they were going to try at least Allen's year, that they were going to come away with somebody and that they were going to do everything they could to get a guy. Second to that, I've never been as confident that like they're going to target a certain position, they're going to go get it, and receiver for me is that. So I do think defensive end is on the table a lot, like Chop Robinson we've talked about and others, but yeah, this is as confident as I think I've ever been that they're going to do something specific.
Do you remember at all anything about the 2020 Panthers with Joe Brady as offensive coordinator?
Some, yeah. What I remember is they were very good at getting all of their weapons involved, that yep. they had the right combination. And keep in mind, this is with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback, that they were very good at getting guys open underneath. And that would have been Samuel and McCaffrey, right? They would have had the yak guys that you would have wanted. And at the same time, they had deep threats. They had the combo of short to intermediate and then over the top. Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore both had 1,000-plus yard seasons that year, and both had really high yards per reception, like they were downfield threats. So I don't know if you can still do that to the same degree, even in only 4 years. I know the league has changed a lot for how often you can get open down the field like that, but what I remember is that they had an average quarterback and four great skill position players, and Joe Brady found a way to get all four of them involved.
Robbie Anderson, who's now Robbie Chosen, by the way.
Is he Rob? Or is he was Chosen Anderson, too. I think maybe he went from Chosen Anderson to Robbie Chosen. He's all over the place. I think
that is correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Yeah, no, he's all over the place. His name has changed a couple times. According to now, I believe his name right now is Robbie Chosen. So
if people
see that, that's the guy we're talking about when we say Robbie Anderson. 136 targets that year.
Right.
That is massive.
Number one on
that
the
was
team, probably,
their number
right?
one guy. So wait a minute now. Joe, Curtis Samuel, we've talked about him as being their, like, he had his best year in his career as, with Joe Brady in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He was their number three option behind, right. and as far as targets are concerned, right?
Right.
Robbie Chosen, 136. DJ Moore, 118. Curtis Samuel, 97. Now, in all fairness, also, Christian McCaffrey missed a whole bunch of games that year. That's the year he got hurt.
Oh,
he only
okay.
played three games.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Mike Davis became their lead pass-catching running back. He had 70 targets himself, by the way.
Right.
Mike Davis did with 59 catches. But when you think about that team with Curtis Samuel, and we say how much he had a really nice year, and he did. I mean, he had 97 targets, 77 catches, 851 yards, really nice year with Joe Brady. There were two guys well above him as far as options, if you want to consider targets as, you know, what the options are. And Robbie Chosen and DJ Moore, and there's no shame in DJ Moore being, I mean, he was, but man, I was stunned looking at it. that Robbie Anderson, Robbie Chosen, was the number one guy on that team.
Yeah. I think that's about where Samuel is rightfully slotted. Like, I think when you can be at your best offensively, he's probably, I mean, that year I'm looking at now, 97 targets is a big number. Like, that would this year probably be second on the Bills. Like, I'd be very surprised if they had two players not named Curtis Samuel that got 100-plus. I don't want to say it's impossible, because I think Kincaid's going to get there. And if they drafted, you know, maybe Thomas would fall a little under that. If they did the big trade up and got a Dunsay, I would definitely think that guy gets 100-plus. But I think most outcomes, a rookie you draft in the first round is probably falling below 97. So that number might have him second on the Bills, but that year in Carolina, I mean, he is a key contributor, but not necessarily the focal point of an offense. And I think that's how the Bills paid him, right? Like, $8 million is not a lot for wide receivers, given the boom at the position. So it's definitely somebody you want to contribute, but at the moment, he's your number one receiver. If we do it by total target getters, he's probably second to Kincaid. And I think you'd like that to just be bumped down one spot. And you have the example of Brady in 2020 here, where they got guys involved and Samuel was third in the pecking order.
They also didn't throw to the tight end that year. Now, they didn't have guys to really throw to, right? I mean, Ian Thomas was their number one guy.
Yeah.
And then they had Chris Manhertz, and we love Chris Manhertz here in Buffalo, of course, Canisius College, you know, basketball player, but he's not a pass-catching tight end. He's more of a blocking tight end. Ian Thomas, 31 targets, 20 catches. Like, he had a very non-year. It was basically those guys, and then that's it. Now, Mike Davis, like I said, running back 59. If McCaffrey's up there, he's going to be one of those main guys. But they had three receivers. They spread the ball around. But here's the takeaway I have from looking at it, which is, you're right, Joe. Like, that's where he fits, right? That's where Samuel probably fits. Okay, so Brandon Bean says we don't need a true number one. Okay, I don't know if he actually believes that or not. It might be just kind of GM speak as you lead up to the draft, because, like I said, you don't want to lose leverage. But you bring in Curtis Samuel to the Buffalo Bills, and you look at the depth chart right now. He is their number one on the depth chart, right? Would we not disagree with that? Is it right now, Curtis Samuel, if you said, okay, you have to have a number one, you'd say it's Curtis Samuel. It's not Khalil Shakir, correct?
I would say Samuel over Shakir. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say Samuel over Shakir. Number one. Number one for me.
Okay, so based on that.
Yep, go ahead. I was just going to say, just because.
Based on that, I'll say this. Based on that.
Yep.
You go back to 2020. There's no way Joe Brady thinks that Curtis Samuel's his number one receiver, right?
No. Nope.
Okay.
Yeah. No, he'd be used more in a specific type of role, right? It would be, I'm going to use him in the backfield. I'm going to use him on screens. I'm going to use him, you know, one of those guys where you work to get the ball in his hands because he's worth that. But when I think of prototypical number one wide receiver, I'm thinking my quarterback drops back to pass and this dude is going to get open on his own. Like, he's going to go beat the corner one-on-one. He's going to find a soft spot in his zone and he's going to warrant a target partially through scheme, but also on his own initiation. And I'm not saying Samuel can't do that. I think there's some good breakdowns from Matt Harmon and others that Samuel is actually better at that than maybe his coaches have given him credit for and how he's been used over the years. But he's not someone I'm expecting. I'm just going to line him up out wide and he's going to go one-on-one, basically play the Diggs role of past years and go get me 130 targets. I don't doubt he could perform in that circumstance. I think there's enough on his resume that says you could use him differently than he's been used in the past, and you'll still get good results. But I'm not expecting him to go play the Gabe Davis or Stephon Diggs role and come back with some elite season, with him now suddenly being considered a top receiver in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it now. I go back to 2020. I look at how he used him, and obviously, I mean, think about how this all works, right? So Curtis Samuel becomes a free agent. The Bills go out and get him. Joe Brady is the offensive coordinator that had Curtis Samuel in 2020, had his best year. Obviously, you're not doing that unless Joe Brady vouches for going to get the guy, right? I mean, Brandon Bean's going to go and like, hey, you know, what do you think? Curtis Samuel used him. Whether it's whether it's the Bills front office and pro scouting staff and Brandon Bean bringing it to Joe Brady, or Joe Brady going to them and going, guys, you go get me Curtis Samuel. That'd be great. One or the other. I don't know who initiates it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they got to be on the same page to bring Curtis Samuel in and have a plan for him. However, that said, the plan, when he had him, and he loves him, but he still was his number three guy.
Right.
So I don't think he's coming to Buffalo with Josh Allen as his quarterback in a Super Bowl window and going, oh, yeah, bring him here, and he's going to be my number one guy. I can't see it. I mean, I think about it like that and say, oh, my God, they just they have to do something at number one, despite what Brandon Bean said last week, which I'm sure he believes that, hey, if we really got down to it, Josh Allen could carry us as far as he can, and we could still be successful. There's a difference between successful and being a Super Bowl champion, I think, though, if you're talking about Curtis Samuel being your number one or your number two or three based on how it went when he was in Carolina and trying to translate that to Buffalo. Yeah. They have to do something to get someone over top of Curtis Samuel.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a game plan point to be made here, too, that I there's definitely people out there that are more qualified to give this point than I am that could get into the X's and O's of it. But I think there's definitely a point to be made about Samuel and the style of player. And if Joe Brady wants to use him similarly to how he used him in Carolina, those plays that you used him in, like, I think it's going to be easier to defend Samuel on those plays if you don't have the threats on the outside. Like, part of, I'm sure, what helped Samuel have that big year in Carolina was not one, but two wide receivers were threatening defenses down the field in Moore and Robbie Anderson. And right now, if I'm walking into playing a game against the Bills, like, I have to respect them down the field on some level just because of Allen. Like, Allen, no matter who the receiver is, like, he might throw it. He's thrown a deep bomb to Patrick DeMarco in his life before. Like, he'll throw it up to anybody if the guy's open enough. So I have to respect that on some level, but I'm just not afraid. I'm not afraid of anybody. If I'm playing the Bills defensively and they didn't do anything at receiver in the draft, I'm walking into that game thinking, all right, guys, here's what we're going to take away. We're going to take away Samuel, Cook, Shakir, and a lot of that's going to be middle of the field and a little bit of a shorter, you know, type of game plan. We can bring our safeties up a little more than we used to. And if I'm the Bills and I want to prevent defenses from doing that and having an easier time, how do I want to do that? I want to have a multitude of different types of weapons. I want to have versatility. I want to have a guy like Brian Thomas who is going to threaten you over the top. Like, this guy runs a 4-3-3-30. He was destroying defenses deep in college, and you better watch out for him, because if you fall asleep on him for half a second, he's going to blow by you, and our giant arm quarterback's going to throw it deep to him. And now, because you're focused on that, opens up things for Curtis Samuel, opens up things for Shakir, Kincaid over the middle, Cook, you know, in the short game as well. I just wonder how successful these Bills pass catchers that are on the offense right now can be if they don't have someone taking attention away from them on the outside.
You can get connected with us. We will get connected with you, our fans, and that will be brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. You can tweet us at SalSports, at SneakyJoeSports. You can also call us, 803-0550. Welcome to Monday, the first day of the week, of NFL Draft Week, I guess is how we should say it. Of course, we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage for you all week long here on WGR Sports Radio 550. We'll have draft night coverage for you. That's going to be on Thursday night. Joe and Jeremy are going to be, how's the wide receiver big board coming along for your draft party?
It's going good. We have it up. We had to add a couple names. So Troy Franklin is going to go up on the board. Jalen Polk will go up on the board.
Wait, Troy Franklin wasn't on the board?
No, I think maybe the label got misplaced or was forgotten. It was not on purpose. It was not on purpose. He was on our radar.
By the way, what happened to that guy? He was like the number one flavor for Bills fans 2 months ago.
Yeah. I've been scared off him, I would say, in the first round.
All right.
I think the best analysis that informed my change of heart on him was from Joe Marino, Locked On Bills, who will be on with Jeremy and I on Wednesday. And there's two things. One, Oregon is weird, I guess, right? Their system and projecting players to the pros is tougher because of how they play.
It's always it's been since the Chip Kelly days.
Yeah, and that's happening with their center too right now, I think, who's starting to fall on boards. The other thing is Joe kind of said, like, he's going to be a very specific role. Like, he's going to be downfield threat, runs a couple of routes, and I think he maybe compared him to, like, Jameson Williams in Detroit. Like, he'll perform at what he's going to do, but just not the type of wide receiver one upside because of the route tree, and maybe also he's thinner, like kind of the Xavier Worthy, you know, right. issue. He's just a little taller. So I don't know that he's got the complete repertoire to be like a 125, 150 target guy someday.
We are going to have Mike Catalana join us coming up after the first time out coming up here. He is from 13 Wham in Rochester, does the Buffalo Plus YouTube show with, of course, Jenna Cottrell and Dan Fates. So Mike's going to join us. If you go to Mike's Twitter profile, over 500 Bills games covered. I love that. Mike's seen it all. He's been around it all. He's also a big Philly sports fan, so we can touch on that with him. But Mike's going to join us. Not only that, but on the Rochester Americans. We'll get what's happening with the Rochester Americans, the AHL playoffs. Mike Catalana at 11:05 from our sister station in Chicago. Chris Emma is going to join us. Let's talk Bears because they're at a pivotal spot. Are they going to draft Roman Dunze? Are they going to trade down? They're at number one, but they're also at number nine. That's been a spot where a lot of Bills fans feel you got to maybe be if you want to get up, you know, to draft someone like that. And of course, that would be really, really unlikely for the Bills to go that high, but we'll see exactly what he says the Bears are thinking with that second pick. So Mike Catalana joins us coming up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, glad to have you with us. It's draft week here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
One of the things that people don't always know the full details on, though, is what are their mentals? What are their smarts? What are their habits? Those playing big, and our coaches and our scouts have really worked hard. You know, the scouts for a while, but the coaches have really jumped in now, trying to quiz these guys either at their pro days, at privates, Zooms. You've seen some of the names we've had in here. We have tried to go through that, and some have really tested out well.
Brandon Bean last week down at One Bills Drive. A little bit of all-encompassing. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott. We also heard from Josh Allen and Terrell Bernard. First week of workouts, obviously, leading up to the draft. Good chance to talk to the general manager. And, you know, he's not going to tell you everything, but we'll try and parse through it with our guy Mike Catalana, who joins us right now on the West Her Hotline from 13 Wham in Rochester. Mike, good morning. It's Sal and Joe. Thanks for joining us, man.
Sure. Good to be with you guys.
All right. So you were down there. You and I had a... Yeah. Couple fun discussions while Brandon Bean was talking last week. How much kind of stock do you take away from what he said? Being, you know, I don't want to say he's lying, but we know they keep things close to the vest, right? How much can you read into what he said and what's believable and what they might want to do on Thursday night this week after what he said last week?
All right, so I hear people say, "Well, you don't want to give anything away." Let me ask you this question: if you're any other general manager in the league, and you look at the Bills roster, and you look at the wide receiver room, do you think you can pretend and say, well, Brandon said we don't have a glaring hole? I mean, guys, you know it. Curtis Samuel has 317 career catches. The rest of the wide receiver room, if you include Isabella and Hamler, have 255. I mean, that's in their careers. Now, I know sometimes you got these young players. Okay, Khalil Shakir would be that guy, that young player you think can ascend. But they don't have a number one. They don't have a guaranteed number two, like a guy you've assumed there, though I think Curtis Samuel could be a nice player for them. And they are hoping Shakir is the guy that moves into that role. But we waited a couple years for Gabe Davis to do it, and he never did. They have a glaring hole at the position. There are receivers out there. You just got to find the right one. I'm still going to say this. They need one. They need to move up if they can. And I will be stunned if they don't. Well, certainly have one in the first two rounds. You can't wait.
Right.
But I think they need it in the first round, and I think they need to take a swing.
How likely do you think it is that he stays at 28 or if he moves up? I know you say go up and get one if you can.
Yeah.
Judging by the way he talked about it and judging by his past, do you think they move up to grab a guy?
Yeah, they move up. I think they have to. And it's funny, when you start looking, like, I swear, I've looked and said, come on, go take a big swing. Like, what would it take? But then you have to say to yourself, let's just use an example. The Atlanta Falcons or the Chicago Bears and all. Like, you're talking about if a team's moving back to 28. I mean, you've seen the Bills. When they've moved way up, like they did even to get Josh, it took two moves, right? Because it's hard to say to, you know, you say to the Bears, you want to move back. What are you giving them? You can add up the numbers, but are you really going from, you know, 9 to 28? Like, you're going to have to give up in next year's pick, maybe the high 2 and a 1, whatever it is. So you got to look at it. But I have them. Look, we all do our own mocks. And it's funny, I heard Joe mention it. I have them moving up to Philly at 22 and getting Brian Thomas. I like him. I think he is physically talented. I think he fits what they want. Big-time program at LSU. I think he's the type of player. But, hey, let me tell you something. My dream is them to get Adunze because I think the guy is going to be off the charts good. But I don't know if they can get up that high. I don't think the Bears are trading that pick. But I give up a lot to get that guy because these top 10 wide receivers, if you look at 2022, the guys who are in there. This is what really strikes me, guys, when I look at it. You look at Drake London, Garrett Wilson, even Chris Olave, the top 11 picks with average or terrible quarterback play, and they're still really good. That should tell you something about the type of player. And you put a Josh Allen in the mix with that kind of guy, but it's tough to move that far up.
Yeah. It just it feels like how bad could it really go, right? Like, I know it could go poorly. Like, we've even seen how Elam's career has gone, but very much like you look at the offense and the vacancy of targets and Allen as the quarterback, just it would feel like you'd have to work really hard to not have it work if you've got that talent level that's worth trading up for, and then you fall into this situation. Like, it's the situation that I feel like a lot of receivers would kind of kill for right now.
Yeah, there's no question, right? And you say to yourself, what would it take? And look, they have other needs. We know they certainly do. But I'm just looking at it saying, you really, listen, I think we've all come to the realization that they moved on from Diggs for a lot of reasons. He got 160 targets last year. I don't think anybody on this roster is going to get 160 targets. So they're going to be spread out a bit more. But you're talking about starting the season with, you know, this, and you have to add to the mix someone who can step in. And I know Kincaid should be moving up, and the hope is that Shakir is. But I'm with you guys. I just think that it is a glaring hole. I think Brandon Bean fully knows that. And the good news for Bills fans, I guess, if that's what they want, is that Brandon Bean is not afraid to make a move. He's certainly not afraid to move up. It's just a matter of for who and for how much he would give up. But when that day is over, you look back at a draft, you see the year Justin Jefferson, they didn't have to move up, but Justin Jefferson goes to the Vikings. Do they really care what the rest of the draft was? Like, if you get an elite player, at wide receiver in this draft, I think it's going to be monumental for the franchise. And I think he's got to do what he needs to do.
Would you advocate moving back if the top four are gone? I'm including Brian Thomas Jr. now. If they can't get any of them, they can't move up. You're sitting at 28. Would you advocate moving back to get more assets, or would you rather them take somebody they do still like or even another position?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, we joke about it on our podcast. Is like, well, you're not in the room, because we all would say that. Like, I don't know how high they have a Ladd McConkey or a Leggett or one of those guys, right? I mean, if one of them in their board is considerably higher, then you say no. You know, you either take the guy a little early, or you don't move and don't move back, because you would feel like that's the case. My concern would be if they had five or six guys all roughly the same, then maybe that's not the guy that you need for this offense anyhow. So it's hard to sit there. It's hard to sit there and go, man, we're at 28. 28 is a lousy place to be drafting. The great thing for this team is that they've been really good and close, but it just highlights just how close they've been and not gotten there. But it's also tough because everybody knows they don't have 28 first-round grades. He said this. So do you go another position? Do you trade back? Honestly, waiting from 28 to 60 would be painful for this franchise if they don't get a wide receiver. So I guess if you move back to somebody like the Cardinals, you move back into the early 30s, and maybe that's not the worst thing in the world to do. But look, they have to come up with somebody. And then honestly, guys, I think they're in the market for a veteran too. I think they're still in there, post-draft veteran.
Interesting.
You know, whether it's an Odell or somebody like that, they need real targets, guys who have been there and done that before in this wide receiver room, and they don't have it.
Yeah. What level? I mean, you mentioned Beckham there, because I've thought about this too, Mike, where like on the outside, the Z and the X guys. I mean, that was Diggs and that was Davis last year. And while Diggs was still on the team and they had signed Samuel, I remember having the discussion with everybody that like Samuel's not your prototypical Davis replacement. He's going to do other things for you. Well, now Diggs gone too. It almost feels like you have two guys that are primarily guys that you see play on the outside to fill. And is Beckham like that level of player, even if it's not him, kind of what you're thinking if they add someone else?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you got to protect yourself here a little bit too. And I'm talking about, I mean, there is a, you know, we're talking about the room right now just with a lack of, you know, Mac Hollins to me is a special teams player, you know, a fifth wide receiver. There are so many things to really like about Shakir, but we've all seen the projection, right? Can you project from being, fifth round, he's good. Oh, he catches a lot of balls. But now when you increase the targets, can that move up? That would be phenomenal for them. But they have such a huge need. And you're talking about lining up here. I mean, you're right. So say they go out and get two young wide receivers. But I don't know if, unless it's like a Brian Thomas or a guy like that, that you believe from day one can play that role and you can put him out there. Like if you draft Ladd McConkey at 28, I don't know if he's a talented guy, but I don't know if he fills that role for you. You still need that, and that would be tough to turn around to Josh Allen and say, this is what we're rolling out with in 2024.
Mike Catalana, 13 WHAM, Rochester, Buffalo Plus. We'll let you tell everybody what you got going on with that here in a little while. I do want to shift gears and talk about the Rochester Americans. Syracuse Crunch are on deck for them in the AHL playoffs. Can you kind of give Sabres fans a little bit of an idea of where this team is, what the roster is going to look like now that the Sabres season is over, and what their prospects are here in the playoffs in the AHL?
Look, you know, it's funny. We went through a long stretch here where they had their own drought with the Amherst, where they either didn't make the playoffs or never advanced. Seth Appert changed that here. He just did. And I've advocated for him. Look, I know the Sabres. I don't believe the Sabres are promoting him as a head coach. But this guy has created a culture in the AHL, which is difficult to do. They develop players, yes. But this team has an identity. They finish strong. They play tough. They're becoming a tougher team as the year goes on. They incorporate the young guys with the veterans. They earn their ice time. I mean, they finish the season strong. Last year, they made it to the conference finals. It'll be tough with them and Syracuse. You know, the AHL, you know, you get to a certain round, like they get to Hershey. Like, there's some teams that still employ as many veterans, older players, which is tough in the AHL with young players. But you're going to see Kalik. You're going to see Byro. Rosayan has played really well. Levi is the key guy, right? This is his chance to show something in a playoff run. He's been really good for them. So Syracuse finished poorly. Amherst finished strong. But, it's American Hockey League. They play each other a ton. They're right down the road. Amherst beat them last year in the playoffs. But I think they're fun. I think it's worth taking a trip down here to watch them. I think people will enjoy it. But, you know, the guys like Wahlberg and Oslin, they are here. They're playing. They're trying to incorporate them into it. But it's one thing about Appert, boy, you earn your ice time there, whoever it is. And that's the way this team has played, and that's why they've had a good level of success.
Yeah. And maybe even more so for Saber fans, too, because obviously, you know, from Buffalo, you're going to care more about, you know, the prospects that you might see here one day. And it's right to put, I'm not watching the games. I'm looking at the numbers, though, that Kulik and Roseanne have really kind of heated up here at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Kulik, sometimes you watch him. He had a couple of plays the other night. And I think it was the game on, what was that, on Wednesday night, where it's to me, him with opportunity, it's almost comical. He has a great skill set. And he'll deliver. He delivered last year in the playoffs. He's still a young player. It's the hard thing is, as you guys know, how does that translate? Like, is he AHL plus, or is he a guy that can really come into Buffalo? But you will be impressed by his skill set. I don't think there's any doubt. But again, I would say this. I don't know when it is for Levi. He's still a pretty young guy, but we've seen it here before, you know, with goalies coming into Rochester, yeah. You know, whether it was Ryan Miller, Marty Baron, those guys. Playoff runs are big. It's an opportunity to have it all on your back, everybody counting on you. I think that's the exciting part of what we're going to see this year, is seeing if this guy can lead them in tough moments and tough games. He's been good. He's been good down the stretch. I mean, his goals against, he's given up, what, 63 goals in 26 games? He's been really good, but now you do it with that added pressure of the playoffs.
It's a best of five against Syracuse. For everybody who wants to know, Friday is their first game, 7 o'clock in Rochester. They play again on Sunday. Then they shift gears to Syracuse for a couple. Then if game five is necessary, back in Rochester, and that is Friday, May 10th. You're right. They're not going to hire Seth Appert for the head job in Buffalo. Maybe there's a spot for him behind the bench because he's worked with a lot of these guys on the Sabres roster and all those great things you say about him, Mike, which I'm sure Kevin Adams also believes. But do you have a favorite idea for the Sabres then, for their head coach, given what you heard Kevin Adams talk about?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they want a guy who's got that experience. And you guys know, you've gone through it. You know, just because you bring in Dan Bylsma, who's won a cup, doesn't make it work.
Right.
I do think sometimes teams pivot and maybe overreact. There you go, we got to have this guy with this experience and all. You know, I don't know the specific guy. Love Lindy Ruff, love what he did for him. I don't know if you go to that well again. I don't know if you go back to that. I know a lot of people like the sort of the nostalgia of it, and they know the way Lindy was, but I don't know if that works. Now, maybe you have a guy like Appert with him. If you're going to do that with a veteran coach, listen, Seth Appert's going to be 50 years old. It's not like he's a kid. So he's been around, but I think at some point he needs to get his opportunity in the NHL, whether it's in Buffalo or not, as an assistant coach. But I think they're going to hire a veteran, whether he's won the cup or not. I think that's what they're going to do, and it probably makes sense. But you got a pretty good coach down here that if he's got some role with the team, I think it'd be a positive.
Mike, you are a Philly guy. You wrote on your X profile, it says Philly sports apologist. I'll ask you it this way.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go, right? Give me rank these Philly sports teams as far as most likely and least likely to win their next championship.
Okay.
Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, Sixers. I'm going to guess you're going to put Eagles one, but you could surprise me. You're the Philly guy. Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, Sixers, 1 through 4.
Well, I think Eagles and Phillies are about equal. I mean, because Eagles have been there, and they won one a few years ago, but the Phillies are really good. Their starting pitching is outstanding. Now, they're in the tough division. I hope Dan Fates doesn't hear this. Big Braves fan. I try not to give him too hard of a time, but maybe he knows the Phillies have knocked him out the last couple of years. But they're really good, and it's the baseball playoffs, and they've been good. They should have made the World Series again last year. The Eagles are really good. I don't know what happened at the end of last year, but they're going to have to show a lot this year. I love the Sixers. They can't get out of their own way sometimes. Embiid's banged up. Now I'm reading that Maxey's got illness, and he's questionable for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So you never – with that franchise, you never know. And speaking of Amerks and Flyers – honestly, John Tortorella, I think, is with Danny Briere, which is interesting, is really starting to turn that around. They finished poorly this year, but they are definitely fourth on the list. So I would say right now, Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Flyers.
All right.
All right.
Sixers NBA playoffs, right? What'd they do? They lost game one. Right?
Let me ask this. If the
they
Sixers
lost game one to the Knicks and B got hurt, came back in, they play game two tonight. we'll see what ends up happening.
If hypothetical, I know it didn't happen, but if Embiid had stayed healthy all year and was healthy right now, would they be on the top tier with you, with the other two for you?
Well, they were. Oh, yeah. Well, again, they haven't shown they can do it. Like,
right.
The Phillies got to a World Series, lost to Houston, and, yeah. and we're right there. The Eagles won a Super Bowl, and we're in another one, and we're right there. The Sixers have been that team that cannot get past a certain point. Mm-hmm. They keep losing in the second round. But they were 31-8 with Embiid and Maxey on the court this year.
Right. Which I think
Mike,
was second
Go ahead. Yeah. That's all right. No problem. We got to run, but we want you to promote what you got going this week because you and Jenna and Dan do such a great job over there at your station. And, of course, on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel, we've had all three of you at different points on WGR. We love talking with you. So why don't you tell everybody what you guys got going on this week?
Yeah, we're recording another podcast today. We usually have one out every Tuesday, even during the off season. We have content all week long. We got a special show leading up to the draft, 7:30 to 8 on Thursday leading up to it. Dan's all fired up today. He's got his hot takes on what the Bills should do. I think he wants to be very aggressive. And Jenna has to referee between the two of us. Sometimes we need to shut up and let her talk more. But that's coming up, and then we'll have content each night. So it's just Buffalo Plus on YouTube, and if you get a chance to check it out, we appreciate it.
Mike, thank you for doing this, and see you on Thursday, buddy.
All right. Good to hear from you guys, and we'll see you Thursday.
All right, thank you very much. Mike Catalana, 13 Wham in Rochester. Great job they do over there with Dan Fates and Jenna Cottrell. And, Buffalo Plus YouTube channel. Really nice stuff they have going on there all week long. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up here this hour. We'll get to Chris Emma, who is from our sister station in Chicago. What are the Bears going to do? Will they pivot out of the number 9 pick? We went a little long with Mike Catalana, but we're glad to because he was excellent. Check that out on demand, WGR550.com. And, of course, on the Odyssey app, Mike from 13 Wham in Rochester. It's draft week. The Chicago Bears have the number 1 pick. It's going to be Caleb Williams. We're pretty sure about that, right? That'd be stunning if it wasn't. Mm-hmm. They also have the number 9 pick. Is it Roma Dunze? Are they going to trade it? What are they going to do? We will talk with Chris Emma from our sister station, The Score, in Chicago, when we return here on WGR. It's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, moving on here on a Monday, 11:05 a.m. in the East. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. It is draft week in the National Football League. You know, I was at the owners' meetings, and before that, I was at the Combine, actually, I should say. Remember that? Combine. And remember, Joe, we were doing all the shows from there that week and just kind of run around trying to get with all different reporters. And Chris Emma and I, we talked about the Bears for a while, and then we brought him on like a couple weeks later, and I said, Chris, we're going to talk to you again before the draft, I promise. Well, guess what? He joins us now on the Western Hotline. Chris, of course, from our sister station, The Score, 670 and Odyssey in Chicago. Chris, it's Sal and Joe once again here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
What's up, guys? Happy draft week.
Yeah, no doubt. We told you we'd get you back on. We knew we would because the Bears are at a pivotal point. Let's start with the slam dunks of all slam dunks, Chris, I guess. Caleb Williams, number one, right?
Caleb Williams, number one, yeah, it's been trending that way really for the last several months as it became clear that the Bears, via the Panthers, were going to be having the number one overall pick, and they've been scouting him very closely. They've been, kind of held their cards tight throughout this process, and I admire the way that Ryan Poles has gone about this, really trying to remove biases and assumptions from the process. They did their due diligence in every quarterback. They kept an open mind on all possibilities. But they wanted to be blown away by Caleb Williams, and they were. He's impressed them, obviously, as a prospect, as a person, through their various meetings with him. It became clear throughout this process that he would be the guy, and Thursday night, there's no suspense for the first pick.
All right.
Do you like it? Let me ask you this first. Do you like it, like, from your standpoint? Or do you have a guy, do you think that maybe Jane Daniels could be better? Or, hey, trade down a couple spots, get one of the other two guys. Do you think it's the right choice?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, from my perspective as a reporter with this team, I wanted to go about it the same way. I wanted to really scout his film, get to know Caleb Williams as a prospect,
talk to his teammates on the record, off the record, learn a little bit more about him, hear from Caleb himself at the combine, go through all these steps of the process as best I could. And I was just blown away everything about him. He's a special quarterback talent. He really is. And everything you hear about him from people close to him, it checks all the boxes. This guy is a leader. He wants to win. I love the fact that he's come up through really being the poster child of NIL. And some people might see that as a bad thing. I love it. It means that he's prepared. He's not going to be shy about any big moment in the spotlight. He understands pressures. He's had it on him for years. And I think he's really cut out to be what the Bears need in a franchise quarterback.
Well, that's big there especially, is it not? Because, I mean, I'm not there, but I would probably want to assume that he's coming in with the most expectations of any Bears quarterback ever. Although, to be fair, I know Trubisky went second, so it's happened before, but this guy's been touted as not just number one overall, but like one of the best quarterback prospects in maybe even years.
No doubt, no doubt. And look, Mitch came in, as a number two guy, the first quarterback taken in a draft that included Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. That's another issue, but look, he did not have a star mentality, right? He was a great dude, and he's what you want, leading you. But he's somebody who does not that kind of alpha male who's stepping right in and believing he's that guy and he's gonna be, you know, that cutthroat dominant quarterback. And Caleb Williams is that. And think about it, this kid won a championship as a high school sophomore, and one of the greatest games ever. If you look it up, it's this incredible game he played. And from that point on, he was a five-star recruit, big-time expectations, goes on to Oklahoma, makes that bold move to transfer out to USC, wins the Heisman. He's been billed as the number one pick for a year and a half to this point now. So he's not going to be fazed by anything, you know, media scrutiny and everything that comes with being a quarterback in Chicago and all the expectations that are going to be there. He's ready for it. He's been ready for it. And that's certainly a huge step in this process.
Chris, how much at all, if at all, would the Bears have entertained any sort of, you know, trading for the pick? And even if it was just to the number two or number three spot to ensure they got another quarterback, was this, you know, we just can't do that? Or do you think that they actually would have thought about that or would still even think about that?
My understanding is they didn't really entertain it at all, where last year they were open for business, declared it. Last year when they had the number one overall pick, they knew they were still a year away. That was year two of building this roster for Ryan Poles. This is year three. You got a roster that's ready to win now, and you feel like you're just a quarterback away at this point from being, you know, a true contender. And it's been setting up for this. You don't want to be picking high again and looking for your next quarterback. And they saw a roster around the quarterback position that's ready and that's in a good position, and they believe in Matt Eberflus and his staff is in leading this team forward. And everything was set up for them to go get the quarterback. They get to the front of the line with a quarterback prospect in Caleb Williams, who's considered generational type talent. So I don't think they really even entertain the idea of moving.
What has been the reaction to the Justin Fields trade amongst the fan base?
Man, it was toxic, frankly. People love Justin Fields, and there was this huge division through the early part of the offseason about Justin, and so many people, a large fraction of the fan base, wanted to build around him and for him to be that guy, and talking about all the ways the Bears had done him wrong, which is partially true, but a lot of people just weren't ready and still aren't ready to warm up to Caleb Williams. He's polarizing. He's not somebody who's been the most lovable in a lot of ways, and I think a lot of this fan base still has to get over having Justin Fields traded away and having a new guy coming in like Caleb Williams, but it was the right move. They had to do it. Look, I don't think there was a thought it was Justin versus Caleb in the early part of this offseason. I don't think it was that. Like, I think if you put the quarterbacks in this class, Jaden Daniels and Drake May, like, Justin might be fourth in their priority list. They knew what he was. They understood, yes, they didn't do great by him in terms of building a roster ready to win. He had a rebuilding team, and he had to do a lot of things on his own, and he didn't have the best scheme and coaching around him early in his career. But they also know he's limited. They know his fatal flaws. He struggles to process. He's not been quick enough in the pocket to make those decisions, and it's led sometimes to spectacular runs, but it's also led to a ton of sacks and breakdowns of plays that had a chance at success. So they were ready to make that move. It's why they took on a conditional six-round pick for 25. Like, they weren't going to hold out. They weren't going to drag Justin through the mud of making this pick for Caleb and let him, you know, linger on this roster. They were ready to make that move. And, I think a lot of the fan base is still accepting it, but it's time to move on.
Is it make total sense to you that they would move down from the 9 spot? We've been trying to figure out like what's available for trade-up potential early in the draft. I know 9 to 28 is like a huge type of move, but just in general, they've got 4 picks. So moving down from 9, do you even maybe want to call that likely?
I think it's unlikely. I don't see them making a big move. The thing with this draft, if you look at the drop-off in the later rounds, I don't think the Bears have a huge priority to have late-round picks. They might trade one of their future picks to get back in if there's somebody they like, but look, they dealt a 5 to Buffalo for Ryan Bates because they thought that's a better value than what they're going to get. The number of underclassmen declaring in this draft has dropped considerably in the last 5 years because NIL and the incentive to stay around in the college game, and there's a massive drop-off of talent late in this draft. So Bears have 4 picks. They have none after the 4th round. I think they're kind of okay with that to some degree. And if they do make a trade round down from pick number 9, I think it's going to be in that cluster of 11, 12, 13. That's Vikings, Broncos, Raiders. 3 teams that need a quarterback might be incentivized to jump the line on the other 2 and get, I don't know, whoever it might be. Maybe it's J.J. McCarthy falling or Michael Penix, but that's a mile jump for the Bears. You can leverage the other quarterback needy teams against each other and try to get a solid return back and still get somebody you felt comfortable getting with the 9th pick. But really, that's the only option I see for them to make a big move down.
Well, because they don't have a lot of picks, right? They don't have many picks in this draft. So how many picks overall do they have, the Bears? I'm trying to look it up right now.
4.
Yeah, just the 4. They're 75 and 100 and something.
So considering their roster, they might want to replenish some things. You know, if you want to move down, maybe that would be the path to do it as far as the capital. For the Bills and for their fans here, the big reason we ask is, let's be honest, I mean, the Bears invested in some wide receivers. They investigated in wide receivers through your sourcing reporting, as mine as well. They really went hard after Gabe Davis. They didn't get him, but they did wind up, going out and trading for Keenan Allen after that. So how likely would it be that they still are in the mindset of get a wide receiver? If Roma Dunze was on the board, something like that happening, I think, Bills fans are interested in trying to move up as high as they can to get a wide receiver.
Yeah, I think if Dunze is on the board, it's hard to see how he's not the best player available. The same as Malik Nabers, if he were to somehow slip to that point. You never know. I don't think it's likely. I think Dunze might be gone. I think those top 3 receivers are gone by the 9th pick. And at which point, what do the Bears do? I think Jared Verse is somebody I've seen as a pick for them. I keep an eye on Byron Murphy, a guy who I think a lot of people see falling out of the top 10. There's a lot of intrigue in this guy. I love the way Daniel Jeremiah described this a couple days ago. He goes, look, the NFL, there's a ton of great edge rushers. There's only 6 or 7 great 3 techniques. There's more of a premium on that position. I would not be surprised if Byron Murphy is the guy for the Bears to pick 9. Or if you do make that trade we just talked about from 9 to call it 11, 12, or 13, you can go get Murphy there. I think that's a guy who might be in play for the Bears.
Chris Emma joining us here on the West Her Hotline. I mean, what would it take? What would it take for the Bears to go from 9 down to 28? I mean, come on. Dream scenario for the Bills. They can go all that high. We've seen it. 27-6 for Julio Jones. We saw the Patrick Mahomes trade for the Bills. 27-10. I mean, I wouldn't expect it, but man, they would have to take an incredible haul to go down that far if they would even entertain anything like that.
Yeah, it would have to take a lot. It would have to take quite a bit. I don't see them in that boat. They took, I think, 10 and 9 the first 2 drafts. They're sitting at 4 right now. I take the over on that, but I think their avenue to make those moves is through trades of 25 picks. They got a bunch of picks in 25 through multiple different trades, including the pick they got back for Justin Fields. So I see them making 6 or 7 picks and doing it through trading future picks away. Yeah, maybe. I guess you would never say never about a mess. If Buffalo's putting out a huge offer, then it makes sense for Ryan Poles to pull the trigger. But I think they're in the mode of that they love the roster depth. They want to get some stars, and you got a chance to get a proven star prospect with the 9th pick and really take your chance on getting another blue-chip guy. So I think that's kind of the mindset at Alice Hall.
All right. Joe, got anything else?
Expectations this year still pretty high, not just for Williams but for the team, right? Like it's about go time, right? You bring in Keenan Allen at the age he's at, I have to think the team believes they can win even with a rookie quarterback.
No doubt. Yeah, they're looking to break through. This is year 3 of this process under the watch of Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus, and they're ready to contend. They went from 3 wins to 7 last year. They had a lot of turbulence last season, but really, they got a very good defense. It might be a great defense this year. I think it could be a top 10 unit as it was late in the season. And they like the upgrades they made around offense around the quarterback position with DeAndre Swift to the mix. And you mentioned Keenan Allen, Gerald Everett. You got Ryan Bates enters the fold along with some depth on the offensive line. And they feel really good about this group where it doesn't take a quarterback like Caleb Williams to be great. Like, if he's still getting acclimated as a rookie, which you kind of expect to some degree, you still got talent on offense. So that running identity, and with Shane Waldron as the new play caller. So, the expectation should be double-digit wins, and it should be being in the playoffs, if not being right there on the doorstep. But the expanded format, I would put the demands on them. They should be in the playoffs this year.
Quick, do you get time for a quick hockey question, Chris?
Yeah.
Is there – you would know better about his situation, because all I know is just health and nothing more specific than that. Is Jonathan Toews going to play hockey again?
That's a great question. Yeah, I've gotten that a couple times from people. It's hard to say. I think so. I think he does want to get back in. I think it's more, the health thing is complicated. He's had some really kind of scary ordeals personally where you want to come back. He's had not just – the long COVID, but he's had concussion history and some really frightening things. So I think it's a really deep personal decision of, do you want to take another run at it and go chase the cup again? Or do you want to, take it aside? I don't know. That's an excellent question. I wish I had the answer, but I don't.
All right.
I'm not kidding when I tell you guys, I literally just went to Tankathon and did a sim lottery. And the one time I hit it and the Sabres got the number one overall pick. Remember in 2018, the Blackhawks were that ball almost went the Blackhawks way, and they would have had Dahlin, Joe. Remember that one? That
I was remember the, someone yes. breaking down some slow motion. This is how psycho we are, Chris, where someone was breaking down slow motion lottery ball tape as the Sabres ball beats the Blackhawks ball like the last second. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Gotta
oh my
love
gosh.
It.
And then, they have the number two chance to get the Blackhawks to win the lottery again, the back-to-back lotteries. That would be, you're going to add Patrick Kane to another superstar forward. I mean, I know it's not Bedard. I know it's not a Bedard type of draft, but boy, that would be pretty incredible if they were able to win the lottery again, Chris.
Yeah, Kyle Davidson, the general manager, spoke a couple days ago after, one of the worst seasons record-wise in franchise history and said, hey, it's time to emerge from this. The rebuilding's over. It's time to get back to contending. So, Connor Bedard was fantastic as a rookie. That's your runaway Calder winner, and you start building the roster well around him. I think a lot of people in Chicago would love to see if it is Toews making a comeback or if it's Kane trying to make a move back to Chicago, see some of the old guard come back, but also just the old expectations of having this team be relevant. This isn't a hockey town by any means. There's a loyal following, but it's not a large one. And when the Hawks are good, it's so much fun in the city of Chicago. I'm a bandwagon hockey fan, and myself, it's hard to get on board with the rebuild, and it's time for this team to get back to being relevant.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today. Enjoy draft week. Should be fun in Chicago, of course, the number one overall pick. And who knows, though? I mean, Thursday night, if you draft 1-9, you're done, right? And you're done for the rest of the night. It's cool. You hear from everybody. And you're like, okay, you could just enjoy. Not like us here in Buffalo. We'll probably be waiting till 11:30 Eastern time for the 28th overall pick.
Let the anticipation build.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, buddy.
Take care.
All right, that is Chris Emma from 670 The Score in Chicago. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Bills can get up to 9, Joe. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears deal a little bit. The Giants are a team that's thought that they could be dealing out of 6. And how about this nugget from Adam Schefter and ESPN? I don't know if you read this or not. There's an article that, let's see, did he write this specifically? I just want to make sure. It might have been him with In Conjunction. Mm-hmm. The Patriots. It says, could they trade down and then back up? Some around the league believe if the Vikings can get as high as 3, their preference would be Drake May, who was coached in high school by Minnesota's new quarterbacks coach, Josh McCown. But many are waiting to see how the Patriots value May versus J.J. McCarthy and whether New England could make a play like the Cardinals, who made 2 trades in round 1 a year ago. So there you go. If the Patriots opt to trade out of 3, they could then follow a similar path to Arizona to get a quarterback they covet. So Patriots out of 3 and then back up and still get a quarterback? All right.
Man, if at that point, though, just take him, right? You think the guy's good enough to draft in the first round? Like, what are we playing games with going up and down to get?
Right.
It sounds to more and more, though, like they are not going to pick a quarterback. That they, it's a combo maybe of they don't like the guys enough, or that their guy will be gone, I guess, if Daniels goes two. And also maybe a little bit of they're not ready for it, which I think is nonsense whenever a team says that. But they act on it. Like, teams do act on that. So is that New England's plan? We're going to kick the can down the road because we don't want the guy coming into this offense year one?
Do you think that, speaking of the quarterbacks at the top, what are the odds that you think Jaden Daniels, or even Drake May, or J.J. McCarthy, I don't know exactly how you feel about all these guys, Joe, mm-hmm. but what are the odds one of these guys is the better prospect and has the better career than Caleb Williams? I guess I'd ask you, if you're the Bears, I know you almost have to take Caleb Williams, but if you're the Commanders, if you're the Patriots, do you think, hey, the guy I'm getting could, I'm really confident he might be better than him anyway.
I just, in these situations, I just kind of want to go with the consensus on a lot of them. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, I would just not play games the least amount of times possible. Just take the guy, and when it comes to, by the way, 2 and 3, I wonder if we've been staring at the draft a little bit too long, because I'm seeing every day another take about how the Drake May should be, like, off boards. That Rodney Harrison was the one yesterday, I think, that was talking about how the Patriots should not have Drake May on their board because he reminds them of Mitch Trubisky or something along those lines. And just, I think, have we been doing this too long? Like, studying it too much tape? What, you know, too many comparisons? The psychoanalysis of all of these players? Because when the college football season ended, Drake May was closer to Caleb Williams than he was to the rest of the pack. And now, he's just been beaten down as a prospect so much that I feel like it's just gone way, way too far. I don't know. Those are the type of guys I feel like I want to buy into. That why is the narrative changing so much in a couple of months where there's no football being played? Like, he's the guy for me right now where I just think everyone needs to settle down and stop overthinking things.
Yeah, I asked Max last night, well, which of the quarterbacks, I gave him a list of all these guys, like the six, I said, I was going to have the best NFL career. He said J.J. McCarthy. I said,
that's the
you
one
know what?
He thinks of the best career?
Yeah, he said he says he can be J.J. McCarthy. Now, I think he just likes, you know, he knows the name J.J. McCarthy, watched some college football, he's into card collecting. And I said, buddy, I think it's the opposite. I think J.J. McCarthy may play for 10 years but never be a franchise quarterback.
Well,
just okay.
Josh saved this tape because in 10 years when J.J. McCarthy's a Hall of Famer, we can run it back, and Max can have a little bit of a bragging right over his dad here, because he called J.J. McCarthy.
That's right. Do you know who I said the exact same thing about not too long ago? That I said, what I said about this guy was, I think he's going to have a long NFL career, he'll never be a true starter.
Long NFL career, he'll never be a true starter. Was it about someone in this draft, or was it like a recent draft?
No, this was about 5 years ago.
Did you say that? That sounds like a thing you would have said about, like, Baker Mayfield.
I said it about Nathan Peterman.
Oh. Hey.
Joe, I think I was right.
The guy,
he's still playing.
All odds is still out here signing NFL contracts at soon to be 30 years old. It is incredible. He turns 30, by the way, in 2 weeks. 2 weeks? Nathan Peterman's going to be active in the NFL at 30 years old after what he did in his rookie season. It's incredible. It's incredible.
I think I can take credit for being right about that take. I have it. It's written. It's said. I said at that draft. I said, I think Nathan Peterman's going to play a long time in this league, and he's going to make a lot of money as a career backup and never be a true starter.
I mean, that's basically what this will be year 8. So I think you can take the victory lap on that. As long as you never said you thought he was going to be good, but it doesn't sound like you ever said that. So
I don't think so. I never said like good or bad. I thought he'd probably get his chance to start and play some games. I feel that J.J. McCarthy will be better than that, but I don't think we'll ever put J.J. McCarthy on the upper echelon of top-tier quarterbacks in the NFL. That's the way I feel about him. And the biggest reason for me is, Joe, he just reminds me so much of these Alabama-type quarterbacks who they're surrounded by so much talent. They never have to carry a team. They never have to be the best player on the field. They never have to really play in a lot of crisis moments and situations. So maybe it's just because I've never seen them like that. But until I see that, I can't believe that necessarily they're going to be that. And I think everything's been too easy for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Can I call this that Sal has compared J.J. McCarthy to Nathan Peterman here on April 22nd of 2024? I feel like we were flirting with a comparison there.
I don't know about that. A little bit. I think it would be better than Nathan Peterman, but that's the way I feel. I do think Jaden Daniels has the best chance to be the best out of this group. I don't know if he will be. It might be about situation, like where he is, the team that develops him.
Yes.
Like I've always said, if Josh Allen didn't come to Buffalo and he went to the Jets, I don't think he'd be nearly what he is today. A lot of it is situation, right? I think Jaden Daniels is the same. If Jaden Daniels goes to the right place, and I don't know, is that Washington? Are they going to treat it right? I'm not sure. I don't know about the new regime and how they're going to treat and develop. But I do think that if Jaden Daniels goes to the right spot, he's the next guy we're talking about as he's the guy in this class that becomes that superstar.
I go back and forth on him because he has a lot of the skill set of what I like of quarterbacks coming into the league these days. He's got the arm, right? Like, it's not like crazy, you know, giant Allen-level arm strength, but it's there. It's good. And the speed is off the charts. The only thing that is scaring me with him is whenever I hear breakdowns of his game and how the biggest flaw in his game is how quickly he drops his eyes, that he's not someone that likes to hang in the pocket. There's an insane stat out there on that he only hangs in a pocket on like 30% of his dropbacks. Like he is scrambling 70% of the time at LSU. And I think you mentioned the situation. For him especially, more than these other guys, I think that's going to be massive because he might really need a good offensive coach to come in, and maybe a good line also will be important here to kind of just show him like, hey man, you don't have to bail here. Like, look, step up in here or just slide to the right here. You don't have to just, boom, bail on the pocket and go run and that be every single play for you. Because that kind of reminds me of Justin Fields a little bit. Fields has never had a good feel for when to run out of pockets. He always takes sacks. He scrambles too easily. But to be fair, Fields never had the good situation, right? He never had the good line. He never had the good coaching staff. Daniels, we'll see. Like, Washington could be that. I think New England is less likely to be that. For his sake, you know what I'd like if I were him? I'd like him to actually drop a few spots and go hook up with Brian Daboll in New York. Like, that's the coach I would want for Jaden Daniels.
Okay. You know what? I think any coach with Brian Daboll should be benefited, but I don't know how much time Brian Daboll has to do that. You know,
that's true.
That's the issue.
That's true. Right. Right. I mean, you don't want to go to a team where you have a different head coach in year two.
Right. And then, of course, I mean, you see what happens there. Baker did for so long, and, you know, we see a little resurrection there, but look at these guys, Sam Darnold, and how much, you know, turnover he had with offensive coordinators. Even Lamar, but he was able to sustain that with offensive coordinators, at least. You know, he's been a two-time MVP now, but it's just not a great situation. Josh has been very fortunate. Josh did not have that the first, you know, 5 years of his career. And then, of course, recently he did after Brian Daboll left and then Ken Dorsey and Joe Brady. But that's a big part of it. So I think Jaden Daniels has a really good shot to be really great. But I do think it's going to depend on the situation and circumstance where he is. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. I have a big podcast tonight with Matt Bove. We're going to talk with NFL Vice President of Broadcasting Mike North. It's one of my favorite conversations every year. Joe, let's take a look at the Bills schedule, kick it around a little bit. Maybe we can come up with a couple of good questions for Mike North tonight on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo.
The quarterback that goes at number two. Which quarterback is it? Is it Jaden Daniels, who I think it will be and should be, or is it Drake May? Drake May certainly has all the talent in the world, but the struggles late in the year are the reason Jaden Daniels, for me, gets the nod at pick number two. That's the burning question right now. But Washington, guys, is doing a great job, I think, delaying it, letting everybody think that they still don't know. Guess what? They do know who they're picking at two, but they're keeping that drama going, that intrigue, and the guessing game going, which is what we all want. We know one. We don't want to know two until that name is called.
Mel Kiper there. I'm also all for the drama. Joe, I do not like, and I'm in the Bills media room, and people are watching the draft, and people are following along on X. And even if we get an inkling in the media room of like what's happening with the next pick, I do not want to tweet it out. I don't want to be that person who says, dude, don't do that. I'm watching the TV. I don't want to do that to anybody. And then you get caught in the, well, how did you not know who they're going to pick? I don't know. It just, it's a weird spot to be in. But I like the intrigue myself. I don't like to look. Unfortunately, because of the environment I'm in, we find out, you know, before it gets announced on TV, a lot of times who the next pick is, whatever team it is.
Yeah.
I just don't want to put it out there to everybody.
I appreciate you doing that because there's nothing that drives me crazier about the draft than Hey, let's just read it from social media. I yelled at our buddy Nate last year. He was hosting coverage, and I was on my drive. I was driving home actually when the Bills were making their selection, and I was waiting for like Goodell's announcement, and then I just heard something. Was it Nate or someone on our show go, they're reporting the pick is Dalton Kincaid, and I was like mad, like not even mad because of the pick, like no, don't spoil it, like I want to hear Goodell announce it, like that's the show of it, right? Like, and they've warned Schefter about this, they've warned Rappaport about this. They do it in the NBA draft too, where Wojnarowski always like has fun with it,
yep.
Where he's not supposed to report it. Just for one day, don't have to be first. You don't have to be first. Just let the show play out. Let people enjoy it. Like I think you are ruining it for so many people. If you know you're watching the ESPN broadcast, and instead of getting the announcement, it's someone on the panel going, "I'm hearing it's going to be Jaden Daniels." Just there's no more drama in it if you do that.
I could tell you. Do you know, Joe? To be honest with you, like. The picks are pretty much like determined and put on a board for some media to see.
Okay.
Like three picks ahead of time.
That
it's wild.
Advanced?
I know it sounds weird. It is. It's two, maybe three, maybe two picks ahead of time. I know this because one year, years and years ago, before it was even, it was the John Murphy show. We were in there, John Murphy show years ago. And we were doing it at nighttime and I was in the studio and they had, it was basically to prep. Anybody who's doing the team media is kind of plugged in for the prep, if that makes sense, right? So they know who to talk about. And I'm guessing they still do this the same way. But they said, look, like there's a link to the back room of the draft where these picks are being made, and they let you know so that way the people who are doing shows like yourself can kind of prepare for it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, right? So I knew like two picks beforehand what was happening. I'm like, oh my God, like this is crazy. And that's when I realized why and how these guys are always able to do this and to say, because somehow they're plugged into that. They get that. And it's not supposed to be consumed by them. It's not for them, but they get it and they get access to it somehow. It's really just supposed to be so people who can do their jobs prepare to talk about the player when it happens right away, right? Like even on ESPN, maybe they have some way to do that, but that's pretty much why. And it always got to me like, you know what? That's not right then. Like, it's not really for the people like me just reporting it. It's really just so people can have prep so that they can have the B-roll available and to do all the stuff they have to talk about the prospect for that specific team.
Sure, exactly. Like, I mean, we should make a, for our draft party coming up Thursday at Resurgence, Jeremy and I will be there, 7:30, 11:30. You can still buy tickets, by the way. Their website, Resurgence, our social media, you can find it. We should definitely make a rule, or maybe even... So you ever been to like a comedy show where they make you put phones in the lockers?
Yes.
You ever seen
that? Well, I've heard of them. I've never gone to one, but yes.
Concerts have that too. Same. I don't think I've been to one, but I've heard of them. We need something along those lines for Thursday. Or just we need a handshake agreement of everybody at our party on Thursday that when we're all standing around waiting for the announcement of who they pick, not to have one guy in the back of the room just yell, they picked Johnny Newton.
Yep. Yep.
Just no. Yeah. You're out if you do that. We're gonna kick you out. Maybe not really. But
I love
just
it.
let the show play out the way it's supposed to.
It should be like a communal event for fans, right? When it gets announced.
Yeah.
It should be a real time, same time, everybody reacts, right? And like they announce it and all the fans go, yay, or oh,
exactly.
Or whatever it is.
You want everyone reacting in real time like it's a goal, right? Like in a playoff hockey game. That's what you want. You want the NFL, I guess, has probably made steps, right, too, to to try to persuade, you know, let the reaction be natural, because they use stuff for that on like social media. Like, here's the reaction to so and so drafting this guy, and you want that reaction to be at the moment. You want it to be, you know, obviously natural.
100%. I mean, the NFL has asked like people to hold off and like, hey, and the people who are more like affiliated with the league, a lot of times they will, but a lot of guys won't. They're like, no, sorry, not. It's my job to report, and if I hear it, I'm going to report it. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that. So you'll have my word. I mean, I'll just wait, and once you hear it on TV, then you'll see it. You basically go, you know, on my Twitter page. By the way, the Bills are scheduled to pick 28. Last year, that pick, 11:30 p.m.
Okay.
11:30 p.m. was the 28th pick of the draft last year. That was the Bengals, I believe, who had that. So if the Bills stay at 28, you're waiting a long time.
I looked at the two previous years, actually, before last year. And the two previous years, I believe, it was like, what, 11:31 was last year? Is that what you just said?
I think so, yeah.
The year before that, I think, was 11:08. But the year before that, the 28th pick was like 11:43. So you get fluctuation, but yeah, the middle of the 11 o'clock hour is probably most likely.
I think that's right. Yeah, for sure. Hey, by the way, Marshawn Lynch's birthday today. Did you see this? You want to feel old? Now, look, I used to joke when I was younger and say, I know I'm getting old when guys had really great careers and they retired. Well, how about this? Marshawn Lynch is 38 years old today, Joe.
Should I feel like he should have been older? Maybe not. He was in the league, actually.
I feel like he should be younger.
He should be younger?
He should be younger. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like he's 38. I don't know.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't. He was on that Amazon broadcast last year doing certain stuff. He doesn't act like he's 38. He's still like a little kid, it feels. It's like at heart sometimes.
Oh, my God.
He played in 2019. Like, he hasn't even been retired that long. Is he going to be Hall of Fame eligible coming up in the next year or two?
Oh, well, when did he last play? 19? So
19.
This will be this year then, I guess.
Okay. This upcoming year or the after the season?
You have to wait 5 years.
Five years. So, okay. So he's got one more.
If his last game was in 2019, then he'd be eligible in 2024 this year.
Okay. Man, he played. Do I have this right? In 2019, he went back to Seattle. He played one regular season game and one playoff game. So he basically he had to push off his Hall of Fame candidacy for a year for 60 yards. All right. Maybe you thought he would do better.
Who is that? Let's see. Actually, I'm seeing here it looks like he might not be until next year, 2025, because maybe. You know, just depending on how, like, what happened with his career there. But he is going to be eligible very soon. All right, we did not talk about the schedule. Let's just do that really quickly when we come back, because tonight, Mike North, VP of Broadcasting, is going to join Matt Bove and me on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. We'll come back. We'll talk about that very briefly, and we'll get you up to the top of the hour with Sabres Live coming up next here on WGR. All right, Joe, tonight, one of my favorite conversations of the year. I've been talking with him for several years, and last year we made it a part of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Once again, that's the case this year. Mike North, VP of Broadcasting for the league, one of the head schedule makers for the NFL. I'm a schedule nerd. Matt Bove is a schedule nerd. I know Mike is. I know you get into the schedule. Anything you want us to ask Mike? He's not going to reveal the schedule on the podcast tonight. It's more about how things work, where teams are seen, those kinds of things.
Pretty much. I mean, something along the lines of like how the year to year shift is with streamers and how Peacock exclusive games, Amazon exclusive games, like what quality of game they get. Because I think year one, it wasn't, at least it seemed this way on paper, that those stream-only games weren't the highest of quality. And then last year, maybe that went up, and maybe it would again. So I think that would be something I'm interested in.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because he's not just the schedule guy, like making the schedule. It's
broadcast.
The TV partners that go along with it. It's broadcasting. And we've talked about the new streaming platforms and getting wild card games and getting the Thursday night package and all of that. How about the international games? And then this Thursday night, Friday night deal, you know, in week one, you guys were talking about playing in Brazil. There's an old law that says the NFL can't play on Friday nights because of high schools. However, by having an international game, they can get around that, right? I mean, like, what's the plan for that going forward? And then, you know what, when I was thinking about, Joe, the Saturday games they have, there's always this block of Saturday games this block of games at the end for like a week or two, like five of them are moving to Saturday, or three of the five are moving to Saturday. Like, how do you determine that? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, because this year and the last couple of years, I feel like it's more of a 5 day a week league. You know, I mean, just because there's a game now on Friday a couple times over the course of the year, and you got Christmas on Wednesday, which will be important. Like, just kind of the league seems to be shifting away from. It was originally, what, 2 days a week? And then it was three, and I feel like it's more and more getting to like four or five.
All right, so tonight, Matt Bove and I are going to record our podcast with Mike North, and it'll be available on the Sal Sports YouTube page like immediately after tonight. So make sure you're subscribed to that, Sal Sports on YouTube. You'll get that immediately, and then tomorrow, for all of you who just listen on audio who don't watch the video, you're going to get it right wherever you pod on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Make sure you're subscribing. In the meantime, Sabres Live up next. They'll have much more for you on any news regarding the head coaching search. Joe and I will be back tomorrow right here on the Extra Point Show. One Bills Live, of course, today at noon, and then, or not noon, why did I say that? At 1 o'clock, and then Show with the Bulldog at 3 here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.